You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is John Lamb Lash. On metahistory.org and in his book, Not in His Image, John presents a radical revision of Gnosticism with original commentaries on the Nag Hammadi codices. He also presents the only complete restoration by any scholar of the Sophionic myth of the pagan mysteries, the sacred story of Gaia Sophia, recounting the origin of the Earth and the human species from the galactic core. I highly recommend the DVD Sophia Returning, created by Jay Widener at Sacred Mystery Cinema, in which John continues to provide illumination on the conditions which are vital to our understanding. So let's not waste any more time and welcome John to the show now. Hi, John. How are you? Are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Good.
I spent most of the day trying to finish your book, Not in His Image, and I could barely put it down. It's an amazing piece of work. Quite interesting. So since the time is limited and there's such a vast amount of information that we could go into, I'm just going to start out by asking you what you would like to share with us tonight.
Well, how much time do we have, actually? An hour?
We have about an hour.
Okay. Two things I would like to concentrate on in regard to my book. Not in His Image, I'd like to point out that this book contains not only what it's against, the argument against salvationist religion and the religious insanity that has infected the human mind, but particularly I'd like to talk with you about the mysteries and what they were and why they are so important, even though they were destroyed. And the second thing, which relates directly to that, is what has been accomplished in my book by recovering the central teaching of the mysteries, which was what I call a vision story, and that is the story of the divine Sophia. So the question of who is Sophia and who are the Gnostics, that general sort of thing, I think we could cover pretty well in an hour.
Absolutely.
So where would you like to start?
Well, I suppose it might be necessary to go back to the beginning where Sophia kind of has her fall into her creation, which happens prior to the Archons,
mm-hmm.
which establishes some kind of aberration that develops before the Earth evolves, which is Gaia herself finding herself in a strange position and going into a fetal position. I'll let you take it from there.
Okay. What I would like, it's quite a challenge, but it's always a pleasure to retell this myth. I want to preface it, however, by saying that the sacred myth of the mysteries, the story of the fallen goddess, or the divine Sophia, is not a myth in terms as would be a fiction or an invention, but it is a story told in mythological language, or in mytho-poetic language, if you wish, that describes the true origin of the planet Earth and the origin of the human species and the conditions in which we find ourselves here on Earth. So as you point out, this myth is remarkable because it's the only myth that I've discovered in all of the world, and I've studied creation myths from every time and culture. It's the only one that gives a coherent story of our planet, of planetary evolution.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people listening to us now will understand that the Earth, when we consider it as a living being, as a superorganism, is, and as a divine being, as it was widely considered in the past, is some called by many names. Mother Earth has been called by many names. So what's so special about this name, Sophia? It really is unique because it comes from a Gnostic teaching that is incomparable. The teaching gives the name Sophia to the spiritual power, the goddess, if you will, who actually was the Earth before the Earth existed. So, the Sophia myth tells us how the Earth came into being through the metamorphosis of this entity, this divine goddess, Sophia. And it explains that she originated in the galactic core. So the origin of the Earth is in the core of our galaxy. But that doesn't mean that the Earth was born in the core. Actually, it came about, according to the description in this myth, which is, I think, as you know, a spectacular description of events. Mm-hmm. It's a spectacular cosmology, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. No question about it.
No other myth, I emphasize, in all of the world, you can search far and wide, will give you such a panoramic picture. And what the myth says is that at the core of the galaxy that we inhabit today, the core of the galaxy where the solar system is located, along with 200 billion other stars, at that core is a hub of absolutely pure stellar plasmatic luminosity, living luminosity, which is awake and alive and conscious. So the core of the galaxy is a vortex of torrential conscious energies, which are called aeons in the Gnostic language, A-E-O-N-S. And these aeons are very interesting characters because the myth tells us that what they like to do is to play and to perform experiments. So you might think of them as scientists, but scientists with a great sense of play and freedom and also perhaps a great sense of humor. And so these scientists at the galactic core who, please note, should not be visualized in anthropomorphic form. Don't picture them as in human form. Don't picture them as winged angels or anything like this, because we're talking about a level of energies and a dynamic of cosmic forces that pre-existed any kind of animal or human manifestation. The best way to envision them, if you need to, is as serpents. That would be great torrents of energy, great torrential currents of energy, like great rivers. And we're told that these aeons like to perform experiments. They are like scientists who like to cook up and design experiments. And then they project those experiments into the region outside of the core of the galaxy, which is in the galactic winds. And so this is basically how the Gnostics explained the origin of the many worlds that are present in our galaxy. They are places where divine experiments are taking place. Human-like beings, other strains of humanity, and other types of entities are living on these planets all through the galaxy, our galaxy. This is only a story about our galaxy, by the way. If you want to learn about the thousands and millions of others, well, go ahead. But in my logic, the first thing to do would be to learn what's happening on our home turf. Right.
Right.
Right. So on our home turf, this group of scientists and artists at the core of the galaxy decided to come up with a species, and they designed the human species. So there's another answer for you. Where does humanity originate? It does not originate on another planetary system. We were not genetically created or genetically modified by extraterrestrials from a more advanced race, such as the Anunnaki. But we were engineered and designed. The very genome of the human species was engineered and designed in the core of the galaxy, in the imagination of these divine beings. And then they projected that template of the human species out into the galactic limbs, and they deposited it in the limbs, somewhat in the way that scientists would deposit a kind of germplasm of a species in an environment to see how it would gradually evolve. They deposited it in the Orion Nebula. And from there, tiny threads or spores of this template, this anthropos template, would be able to travel through space, to propagate through space like tiny filaments, and to deposit themselves in favorable worlds where they could evolve and grow. And meanwhile, the gods at the galactic core could sit back in their observation booth and they could watch this experiment take place. They could see, well, what's the human species going to do? How's it going to behave? How is it going to discover its own capacities? How is it going to operate? And based on the qualities and skills that we've engineered into it, you see? So this, for them, is a very fascinating experiment. Now, the Gnostic myth tells, here's where we really come to the punchline. First of all, get your imagination around that scenario. It's a pretty big picture, you know.
Yeah.
A pretty good picture, but it's not too big a picture. So we're not trying to explain how the whole all the billions of universes came into being, or, you know, who's behind all of that. We're just talking about ourselves and our world. We need to understand our world, the Earth, and our species before we can understand anything else about how the cosmos works.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons why we're really screwed up today as a species in terms of our social order, and one of the reasons why we probably don't have a clear and easy access to other species that certainly exist in the universe, is because we don't know our own story. We don't know who we are or where we came from, and we don't know the problem that we're facing with these so-called archons.
Mm-hmm.
So now we come to the really interesting, one of the really interesting points of this Gnostic myth, and I have to say I've studied it for many years. You can read the synopsis of it on my site, metahistory.org, and also I treat it at length in Not in His Image. And it is a particularly wonderful myth because it has a lot of twists and turns in it. Unexpected things happen. And the first unexpected thing that happened in this myth was that one of the gods or a goddess, because they're gendered energies, just like you could say electricity with positive and negative charges, if you will. These gendered divine energies of plasma in the galactic core were observing the human experiment. It had been seeded in the limbs of the galaxy outside, in the spiral arms, as they're called. It had been seeded in the third spiral arm in a moist nebula, which served like kind of an incubation tank for that template to grow, an incubation tank, as it were. And normally, the Pleuromic aeons would then detach themselves from the experiment, and they'd sit back and they'd watch how it would unfold, because part of their joy was to see how an experiment would develop on its own terms, you see? One of the great things we learn about these Pleuromic entities is a lesson about divine beings who are playful and who leave free the experiments that they instigate. Those Pleuromic eons who right now are observing our world from the galactic core and might even be eavesdropping on this conversation, I don't know. I wouldn't put it past them, you know.
Yeah.
They do that with a great sense of respect for our experiment. They do not want to meddle. They are not gods who lay down rules. Like Jehovah in the Old Testament.
Right.
They don't lay down rules. They don't interfere. They don't send messiahs to butt in on our business and save us or condemn us to eternal damnation. They are extremely, inconceivably enlightened beings who are capable of constructing and engineering something as fantastic as the human species. then they want to sit back and watch what happens to it. And if they already knew, if they already had a preset plan for us, they would be bored in a mere 100,000 years.
Right, right.
So they're watching. Usually they watch. But something happened in our story of our cosmology. And I hope I can give the total rendition of this in the next 8 or 10 minutes, and then we can go on and you can ask me questions, and we can go on from there.
Okay, good.
Good so far?
Yes.
So, what happened was that one of these aeons, or generators as I call them, whose name was Sophia, which means wisdom, became, we could say, obsessed with this human experiment, which is called the Anthropos, the human template, genomic template. And she became enamored of this new species that the gods had engineered in their minds and had implanted in some molecular biological spores. And she started to dream or fantasize, you could say. She had her own idea. The gods knew that there were many ways in which this human strain of creature could unfold and develop. But Sophia loved this creature very deeply, and she was fascinated by its qualities and its properties that had been engineered in it from the beginning. Mm. These include very high intelligence to learn and to innovate and to explore novelty, dianoia, the capacity to communicate and learn, that is the ability to create complex symbolic and communication systems. Metanoia is another quality that was endowed in the Anthropos. That's the quality to develop paradigms, complete paradigms which describe nature or the human mind, and then work through these paradigms and evolve to more and more advanced and sophisticated paradigms, not to be stuck in a single paradigm. And the capacity, especially of epinoia, that is of imagination, and the power of enoia, or intention. So all these faculties, which we know to be present in a very high degree in the human species, were engineered into us by the divine beings. And Sophia loved to think about and dream about what would happen as we began to develop our innate skills.
Mm-hmm.
And she went to the edge of the galactic core, you could say. She kind of put her nose to the glass of the observation booth. And she's looking out from the galactic center. And all the other gods have withdrawn, so she's there alone. Now, she didn't engineer the human species alone. She engineered the human species with a number of other aeons, particularly one other one, whose name was Philete. And so the engineering of the human species was kind of a group or team effort by the aeons. But Sophia became separated from the rest of them by her fascination with what would happen. And the myth then tells us something really incredible. You need to have a certain empathy for the divine beings to take this piece of the story on board. It tells us that Sophia was so fascinated by the world that she projected for humanity to unfold that she actually was drawn away from the galactic core. She was pulled out of the galactic core by her own desire and fascination, and she plunged into the region of the spiral arms of the galaxy. Now, aeons normally don't do that. That is not their realm. And so this was an anomalous event, and you might envision it as a power spike from the galactic core, a massive plume of plasma luminosity spiked out of the galactic core into the region of the limbs. And this was the fall of the goddess Sophia in mythological terms. Is that clear so far?
Yes, yes. It's similar to perhaps a spike that comes from the sun, a solar flare.
Exactly. And we know what solar flares are. And in addition, some years ago, scientists did discover these tunnel-like structures or filament-like structures that proceed laterally from the galactic core out into the limbs of the galaxy, just like solar flares proceed laterally from the body of the sun. And so this is scientific information that somewhat confirms the possibility that such a thing could happen.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So when this happened, which was first of all unexpected, immediately a chain of unanticipated events took place, because normally such a spike would not occur. Likewise, if there was a massive coronal emission that hit the Earth, a chain of unexpected events would probably take place, you know. What happened essentially was two things. First, the pure spike or plume of plasmic energy impacted the matter that is floating in the galactic arms. And that matter is a form of a lower order of material substances. What's at the core of the galaxy is absolutely immaterial, pure light, luminosity, living intelligence, and sentience.
Mm-hmm.
But the material in the limbs of the galaxy is more like a lower order of matter that can be shaped into different worlds. And so it consists of the primary elementary particles and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sea of what the Gnostics called shadow matter, whereas at the core there is no shadow whatsoever. It is pure luminosity.
Mm-hmm.
And so Phaya's plume impacted this sea of shadow matter, and she herself created a huge splash, as it were, when she arrived out there, and she produced what you might consider to be a fracture zone in that area of matter. And as a result of that impact, something really bizarre occurred, which is that a species actually arose. A species was spontaneously created in matter by the impact of her plasma energy. And this species is called the Archons. And they're called that because it comes from the word archai, which means from the beginning or first. And these Archon entities, which are cyborg-like ETs of an inorganic nature, they are inorganic beings, arose directly and swirled around in this region, and they didn't even have a habitat to live in. I know this is a very difficult thing to conceive, but I have pointed out recently that around 1850, a British scientist named Andrew Crook performed an experiment that produced exactly this result.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Faraday, the famous British scientist who was working with electricity in the early days, repeated this same experiment. It's called the abiogenesis of the Acari insects, A-C-A-R-I. Acari insects, which are like mites.
Huh.
And these experiments showed that these insects can be produced by the impact of an electrical field on certain very fine powders.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. So there is, again, some scientific proof. I'm not going to go through this whole scenario citing the scientific correlations to the Sophia myth. I'll just point out to those who are wanting to investigate them that they are many.
Right.
So now let's proceed further, and we can bring it down to our own situation here quite quickly. I would like to do that.
Yes.
Sophia was shocked by the appearance of these entities, which you might imagine to be a great swarm of locusts. They are like locusts or cockroach entities. They're inorganic, but they had, in a way, a human form. But that human form was the form of an aborted fetus or a premature human form, that is to say, very large head and spindly limbs. So you have your typical profile of the gray ET.
Mm-hmm.
And so this colony of locust ETs was flying around, and Sophia had to deal with them. And she had no idea what to do at first because she was in an alien environment. Gods of her nature do not normally, let us say, descend into the realms of matter in the manner in which she had done. At the same time, she was still remembered why she got there in the first place. She was obsessed with a planetary system in which humanity could emerge, and she wanted to see what it would do. But her idea of that system was that it would only have three bodies. It would have a sun, a central sun, a planet rotating the sun, and a moon rotating the planet. That's all she wanted for the human species. That's the kind of world system she herself had envisioned. Such world systems probably do exist somewhere among the many planetary systems in the universe. And so she had to, but these Archon beings were getting in her way. So before she could begin to fashion this world system that would be the habitat for humanity, she had to give them an environment. And so she, although they are a mimic species, they cannot create anything out of their own initiative. And although they do not have any of the fabulous capacities that were engineered in the human species, she allowed them to have a fragment of her divine intelligence to borrow it or use it. Now, they immediately took it as if it were their own. They thought it was their own. And in fact, one particular entity who was a kind of dominant entity in this hive is called the Lord Archon. And he assumed a kind of reptilian form. And he was the leader of the pack, as it were. And when Sophia gave the Archons the ability to create their own world, she told them, she showed them to do how to do it as well by imitating the fractal patterns that were at the center of the galaxy. They created a solar system, a realm of celestial mechanics, of planets, Jupiter, Mars, Saturn, and so forth. The trick is, however, that the planetary system created by the Archons was not alive. It was composed of inorganic matter, inorganic planets, and life was not possible on these planets, especially not the life of the human entity, which needed a different kind of environment. And so what then happened was, over a long period of time, Sophia realized that she had to create the proper environment in which humanity could live, that it could not live in the same environment with this inorganic species. They had their own world. They had what is the prototype of the solar system today. In fact, Gnostics thought that they do inhabit the solar system, but they do not inhabit the Earth. It was not made for the purpose of supporting their kind of life form. So facing this situation, Sophia found out that she had to take very extreme measures. And this brings us down to the creation of the Earth on which we live today. She herself metamorphosed her own cosmic galactic forces into the planet Earth. She manifested the planet Earth in its original form from her own energies, and it was a transmutation of her own plasmatic luminosity. So the Earth was created in this manner from the body of the goddess, but the other planets in the solar system were not. Nevertheless, this structure of the solar system that arose as a habitat for the Archons was very powerful in its own way. It was like, imagine being on a carnival ride, you know, one of those rides like on the octopus or on a Ferris wheel. When you're riding on a Ferris wheel or you're in one of those cars of the octopus with the arms that are swinging out and around, tremendous forces are generated that throw you around. They throw you against the side of the thing that you're riding in. Well, likewise, with a planetary system of celestial mechanics, there were tremendous forces generated by that. And Sophia found, much to her dismay and to her surprise, that the planet that she was forming of her own body was captured in the Archon planetary system. And that is the situation today that we face. We live on a planet that is alive. It's a superorganism. And as a matter of fact, the Gnostics taught that we can actually communicate directly to the goddess who is the planet, Sophia. They communicated to her in heightened states of awareness and in trance, in shamanic trance. And we can actually encounter and communicate with the organic light, which is the light at the center of the galaxy, because her light is still present. It permeates the Earth. It mysteriously permeates all things. So we are living in a magical Edenic environment that the goddess created for us out of her own body. And the purpose of our being here is to fulfill our human potential to learn and play and innovate and discover and love and share all the potential that she saw in us, and to do it co-creatively with her.
Mm-hmm.
That is the setting of the divine experiment. The problem is that this archontic factor interferes with the divine experiment. There is an interference because the Earth is an organic planet captured in an inorganic system.
Mm-hmm.
And in some mysterious ways, and in some other not so mysterious ways, that inorganic system exerts a tremendous influence upon the mind and behavior of the human species.
Absolutely. And it's almost as if, and you go into this in detail, that we've been infected by a virus which was here before the organic system of the divine goddess arrived. And that is really the true nature of what we would refer to as the demons or evil. And we've been led to believe a lie, which has to do with Christianity and with the destruction of all indigenous tribes and with any kind of divine or spiritual information that would assist us with making that connection. In other words, as a result of the Archons' interference with our with meme engineering, they have found a way to, in a sense, control us through religions, politics, the various bloodlines, royalty, and so on.
Right.
With, yeah.
The operative word is deviate. They have found a way to deviate us. And the Gnostics warned extensively about this. I would point out, by the way, that if you read my book, Not in His Image, you will find in there an account of Gnosticism and a spin on Gnosticism that no other scholar has ever given, because I present to you what the message of Gnosticism from the truly the pagan and pre-Christian viewpoint.
Yeah.
And that is very unique. And the Gnostics were very clear in condemning Christianity and Judaism because they were belief systems that are implanted in our minds by these archontic beings.
Mm-hmm.
So the term virus is very appropriate. You don't actually find the word virus in the Nag Hammadi Coptic text as such, the literal word or the equivalent of that word. But you do find the word virus, very interestingly, in the New Testament, where St. Paul is called a carrier of a virus or a plague carrier.
Oh.
And you also find it in the writings of certain of the early pagan intellectuals, such as Cicero and, I believe, Pliny the Elder, who were alarmed at the rise of Christianity and who called it a virus, who spoke of it as acting like a virus. Now, let's just look a little bit carefully for a moment at what this archontic virus actually is.
Okay.
In Sophia's dreaming, and this is the proper word to use in the Gnostic cosmology, it corresponds to the dreaming or dream time of the Aboriginal Indians, the Aborigines of Australia. In her dreaming or in her divine imagination, she saw humanity as a tribal kind of species. We were designed to be a tribe or to be a collection, a rainbow collection of tribes with great diversity. And we were designed with a capacity to do all the things that indigenous people do very beautifully. Well, what's that? Well, they make pots, they make houses, out of nature, out of the jungle leaves or out of the things that are in their environment. The Eskimos make houses out of ice blocks. They costume themselves in beautiful ways. They adorn and tattoo themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they dance. They dance, they chant, they tell stories, they share stories. They have a shamanic component in their culture. Not all the people in these indigenous cultures are shamans, mm-hmm. but they recognize shamans, and they have shamans in their culture to be the healers and the teachers. They teach their children the ways of the ancient people, and they respect the earth and the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And these qualities of indigenous peoples reflect the original qualities that the divine Sophia endowed in us. And she has great faith in us, according to the Gnostics. They call this the pistis Sophia, or the confidence of the divine Sophia. She has confidence that if we were left without interference, if we weren't deviated by an external force
mm-hmm.
that insinuates itself into our minds and our behavior, that we would indeed live on the planet as a glorified rainbow tribe,
mm-hmm.
and that we would develop our human gifts of love and creativity to the highest possible level, and we would be co-creative with her. That is to say, we would co-evolve with our environment rather than try to conquer it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the Gnostics pointed out, and you summarized this very well, I must say. You've digested the book marvelously.
Oh, thank you.
The Gnostics pointed out that everything that prevents us, everything that screws with our experiment, this divine experiment of co-creation with her, this co-partnership and co-powering, everything that interferes with it comes from the source of this archontic virus.
Right.
Which insinuates itself by religious. It uses religion. It uses a particular form of religion. You know, it doesn't use the religion of the earth. It doesn't use the religion of the American Indians or the religion of the Australian Aborigines or the religion of the Amazonian shamanic tribes of Colombia and Ecuador and Brazil. No. It uses a specific form of a vector of religious insanity. And that is the four-point insanity of the salvationist agenda.
Mm-hmm.
First, there is a single off-planet Father God who creates the world without a female consort and rules over it as a severe judge. Second, he has a chosen people that he wants to fulfill his mission. This second point is really crucial, my friends,
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
Sophia doesn't have any chosen people.
All people are chosen.
The whole human race is her chosen people. You see that?
Right.
Right.
Every man, woman, and child. The concept that there would be one select group out of humanity that would represent God's plan is insane, and this is an archontic intrusion into our minds. The
mm-hmm.
third point is the Messiah, who is the divine savior sent by the Father God, the off-planet Father God. And the fourth point in this insane program is Judgment Day, salvation, or the moment when the Father God and his Son stand back and rule the world. They transport to heaven those who have lived by the Father God's rules, and they condemn the rest of humanity to eternal damnation. That mm-hmm. whole program was detected at the moment of its emergence, around 150 AD in the ancient
mm-hmm.
world. It was detected by the Gnostics, and they came out of the mystery schools where they taught the Sophia story to go public and say, this whole concept of the Messiah, the Father God, and salvation is a deviation of the Archons, and unless you correct it, humanity will not be able to complete its divine experiment with the goddess.
Mm. And we have an understanding of what happened to the Gnostics, since how many people are aware of the Gnostics and who they were and what they believed and the brilliance.
The brilliance of the Gnostics, I tell you, if you start to look into it and look past the biases and the lies and disinformation, the brilliance of the Gnostics is awesome. But that is just our own brilliance. Why were the Gnostics so awesome in their understanding of nature and in their understanding of metaphysics and cosmology, parapsychology? They were so because the mystery schools were schools for the highest development of human potential, along the lines that our creator goddess herself visioned it. Mm-hmm. And so they were people who achieved what Abraham Maslow would call peak experiences, mm-hmm. peak experiences and peak potential of the human species. And then they turned around and generously taught that to the world. They taught to the world at large. The best testimony on the Gnostics of the mystery schools is that they were the teachers and instructors of the ancient world. They taught everything you can imagine. They founded the guilds and the artisanal practices of woodworking, music, dance, mathematics. You know, the Library of Alexandria, which was completely destroyed by Christians who did not want the world to know about the mysteries, was not just the library, but it was a great university system, as were many other libraries around the Mediterranean basin, where people learned from these illuminated and benevolent Gnostic teachers. And we today, now, with the recovery of the Nag-Hammadi material, have the opportunity to step back into the right track. We have the mm-hmm. opportunity to once again realize that high level of human potential that the Gnostics achieved. As you point out, and it's something that has to be pointed out time and again, because this is the bitter truth. They were destroyed for what they knew, mm-hmm. you know? Like that old joke, you know, why did the mafia kill Einstein, you know? Because he knew too much, right? It's sort of like that. They were destroyed because of what they knew, and they were particularly destroyed in a centuries-long campaign of intellectual and spiritual and physical genocide. Because if the Gnostic information, if the Gnostic knowledge that I'm imparting to you now mm-hmm. was really available in the early centuries of Christianity, we would have no Christianity.
Yeah, right. And we've gone off on some kind of distorted path, which has caused us to be riddled with violence, rape, pedophilia, wars.
That's right.
Witch burning, and now the hard part for us to get through is that the Demiurge, who is the Lord Archon, rules this world, and the people who are in the key positions of power that we see and that we don't see are the ones that are attempting to further put a noose around our neck by keeping us enslaved permanently in a virtual world.
That's true. The inner virtual world, very essential notion that you mention here. The Gnostics said a lot about the origin of the Archons. I just described it. They arose as a kind of accident or anomaly before mm-hmm. the Earth itself was created. Also about their appearance, they have two primary appearances. The hive, the mass of drones have the appearance of an aborted fetus or prematurely born physical form. Mm-hmm. And the overlords, who are very few, the overlord or overseers of the drones have the form of a reptilians. So this is the origin. This is the first description, accurate description of the appearance, origin, method, and motives of extraterrestrial beings of a predatory kind. Mm-hmm. It's found in the Nag-Hammadi text. Now, you put that in your pipe and smoke it. And it's not found anywhere else. Not anywhere else in the world. So this information is extremely valuable for the liberation of the human race from this insane, psychotic program of destruction that we've mm-hmm. become enmeshed in. I would add a very important point here, at least I think it's an important point. The Gnostics understood that the universe, and not just our galaxy, but all of the universes, because they knew that there were multiple galaxies in the world, are benevolent. The nature of creation is benevolent. The nature of the divine originator, as they called him, the originator, if you want to go to the one divine foundation of all these worlds, if you want to go there, you can go there. The Gnostics had that vision. And they said that the nature of that being is freedom and generosity.
Mm-hmm.
And that there is no evil in the universe. Even the archons are not evil as such. What happens is, and this is the trick, this is the sinister and deviant trick. The archons are messengers of error. They're deceivers, evil deceivers who use simulation. How? That is to say, they simulate. They work through hoaxes. Does that ring a bell for anyone? Wherever you see a hoax happening in the world today, human beings are pulling it off. I'm not saying the archons pulled off 9/11. Human beings pulled off 9/11. But the hoax of the war on terror and the hoax of 9/11 was done by human beings who have been dehumanized by this archontic influence. And they are human beings in whom error and deceit are out of control. And when error and deceit run out of control in our species, we turn upon ourselves and we become demonic. We are the demonic force in the universe. We are the source of these demons. There are no, Satan does not exist as an independent entity ruling from some hell world with his bat wings flapping. You know, right. This is a projection of our own evil. We have got to cop to our own act. That is the only way we will ever break out of the spell of the archons and out of the insanity of this destructive, perverted behavior that is taking the world off course. We've got to cop to our own demons and our own responsibility. And one of the best ways, I think the best way to do that, is to learn this story. Because when we learn this story, we know, first of all, what is the divine experiment? We know what it is. We know why we're here. To live out the dream of the goddess. And not only that, but here's the great news. She's here to live it out with us. That's a very unusual situation. Normally, an aeon who would be at the core of an experiment such as ours would not be so involved. She's like a teacher who goes on a field trip with us and actually does the experiments of the field trip and paddles up the river with us. And we're involved with her. And this is a beautiful, beautiful opportunity for the flowering of our species. So I call Sophia's dream for humanity the divine experiment. So we need to first know that there is a divine experiment here and believe in it. Mm-hmm. This planet can be an Eden. It can be a social utopia. It can never be perfect. I don't mean it will be a perfect world. There will always be some conflict. There will always be misunderstanding and difficulties. But nothing on the scale of what happens when the archons take control.
Oh, right, right. And the thing that bothers me is that with all the mind control and fear, that we've been reduced to a disconnected state, living in large cities, which further alienate us from our connection to the goddess. And the patriarchy, through the various forms it takes, the secret societies, the Bilderbergs, Trilateral Commission, whatever you want to call it, they have their own agenda, and they're pouring everything they can into, you know, through our shadows, which are unprocessed, into further controlling us with cameras everywhere and controls and restrictions. We've lost our freedom. We never were free, right? We were born into slavery. We just didn't realize it because we were like the frog in the pot. We were born into the pot, and it's been simmering ever since, and it's about to boil.
It appears to be about to boil. I would put it in this way. I would say that we have reached a point where the insanity that of the human species due to this archontic infection is cracking. It's cracking wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of things will result from that. One is that the insanity will break in the same way that an abscess breaks when you lance it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like lancing a horrible infection.
Mm-hmm.
This infection is about to break.
Well,
that means that there's
going to
be... Yeah, there's going to be a fair amount, you know, there's going to be a certain amount of ugliness because it's not pretty to... you know, to punch open an abscess, if you've ever done it. But on the other hand, this is the moment of our liberation and the moment of our return to the recognition of the goddess and cooperation with her. Yeah. And several things are crucial for this correction. The Gnostics even spoke of Gaia's correction, Sophia's correction, meaning that she herself would correct this problem. And I can tell you on my experience as a practicing Gnostic and on my background as a scholar, I can tell you that that correction is underway right now. Right now, since March of this year, Sophia's correction is underway, and it's going to unfold very, very rapidly. And so and the number of things that we can do to align ourselves with the goddess are many, of course. We can do it in many ways, but we have very little time here, so I'd just like to quickly give my suggestion on the two most effective ways. Claim back your power. Claim back the power of being a true human being, a sovereign human being. You know, the nature of the archontic virus is deceit, deception. It can only function by deception. And to a great degree, the power that these people wield, these six psychopaths, it is a power of deception. They do everything behind deception. If they didn't have deception, they couldn't wield power over us. They couldn't enslave us. So, take back your own personal power, connect yourself to the earth, to Gaia, Sophia, the goddess, and develop your power with the earth. Realize that you are a child of nature, and that nature is all healing and all wise. So connect with the goddess in that way. Get out of the cities if you can. Get back into the country, and get into some relation to the natural world and the magic and supernatural magic that's there. And secondly, whenever you are confronted with the archonic menace, the globalist controllers, the psychopaths, always remember that their power is a power of deceit, but their power is also a deception. It's an illusion. There is no real power except the power that comes from the goddess, who is our source. Their power is the power of illusion and delusion. And when you can make that distinction in every sphere of life, you can start to unmesh yourself from the spider web of perverse insanity that has been thrown over the human race. We are free.
Yes, exactly.
We are free.
Yeah.
We are free. And our lack of freedom is just part of their deception. It's part of their mind control program. You know, it would be very difficult for me to actually control you, another human being. But if I could convince you that I was controlling you through your mind, the job would be done for me. And that's how they operate. And that's where you have to crack down on them and not buy into that deception.
Absolutely. And, you know, that allows us to begin to process our own shadow and to go within and be the authentic humans that we truly are. We are compassionate. We are creative. We're actually we're brilliant when we're allowed to express ourselves freely and authentically. And it's this false construct that has kind of enamored us. And I just hope that we're going to break through it. We're reaching the end of many cycles, aren't we? You mentioned March, and that's the beginning of the ninth wave of the Mayan calendar, and that seems to be a propitious time.
Absolutely. I didn't arrive at it. Several people have written me and pointed that out, by the way. Yeah. I didn't know at the time that I announced that Sophia's correction began on March 19th of this year. I didn't know that it was correlated to the ninth wave. I'm very happy to hear that. We are definitely in a moment unique to the human species. We're in the moment when we reclaim our divine birthright. And this is not a matter of hope. This is not a matter of fantasy. This is a matter of a sacred commitment to humanity and to the earth. And if you make that commitment, I believe that you will find that there is so much more in us and so little in the powers that appear to control us, that the balance of power can change and can shift perhaps far more quickly than one might imagine.
Well, I certainly hope so. I do believe that that's true, and otherwise I wouldn't have as much hope as I do that things can change in a twinkling of an eye. And it does feel as if that process is accelerating. And sometimes I wonder what will happen to the dark side or the dark aspect. And I suppose it's not necessary to worry about that. It will take
no,
care of it.
But the question of what to do with interspecies predators is a question that must be borne on the conscience of every true human being, you know? Mm-hmm. If you're in a room with 100 people and four or five of them are psychopaths who could do harm to all those other people in the room and yourself through their need for control and their deception, mm-hmm. you would be a fool and an idiot if you are not able to identify those psychopaths, mm-hmm. call them on their game. And we need to do that. That responsibility is part of the correction that's now unfolding.
Well, you know, John, the time has flown by, and I could talk to you for hours, but we have just a minute left for you to tell people where your site is and where they can find your material at MetaHistory and so on and so forth.
Sure. My site is metahistory.org on the web, and just go there and click on the site guide. And I've recorded some tapes that I can kind of give you a walking tour through the site. It's massive. I don't want you to get lost in there. So if you listen to my tour, it might help you orient yourself. And that's it. And within that is my second site called Planetary Tantra. And that is contained within metahistory.org.
Wonderful. John, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure and a treat and an honor to be able to talk with you. I love your website. I love your work. And it truly points a way out of this mess. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. It's really a wonderful experience.
Well, it's my pleasure. May you find your way into the beauty and power of the Wisdom Goddess.
Thank you. All right. Well, good night, everybody, and good night, John.